Now, once it goes past the stomach, it's going to be taken over by functions of the liver and the gallbladder, right? So let's talk a little bit about the liver and the gallbladder. The liver is responsible for fat metabolization, detoxification, and essential nutrient storage, among other things. The liver does other things as well, but this is a really important part of it, especially as it relates to digestion. So the first thing is bile acid production, or bile production, is continuously happening in the liver, and your liver keeps regenerating and generating your bile acid pool. It makes bile from things like salts, bile salts, cholesterol, bilirubin, and water. And then, in addition to making bile, it's also storing certain nutrients. For example, it stores all of the fat soluble nutrients A, D, E, and K. The specific transport for these nutrients from the lining of your gut to the liver, right? There are carrier molecules that can grab these compounds, these vitamins in particular, and take them right to the liver where the liver can store them for use. Right. And then it becomes extrahepatic. Extrahepatic means going outside of the liver. So most of these fat-soluble vitamins first go to the liver, get stored there, and then leave the liver as the system requires it. It can also store things like iron and copper and other essential minerals. And it also stores glycogen for energy. So your liver has somewhere between 100 to 120 grams of glycogen stored. Now, that kind of glycogen storage, when needed, can provide you upwards of 400 to 500 calories worth of energy, right? So this is the liver's defense for starvation. It takes some of those the glucose that is being made as a result of digestion, and then takes it into the portal circulation, and then covers it and puts it as glycogen, and it stores it, and it gets ready for when the body's starved to start breaking down the glycogen and sending out the free glucose into circulation. So your liver is doing all of these things. The gallbladder, which is very important, it sucks if you have it cut out, but it's very important. It stores bile that is produced by the liver, and then it ends up releasing it into the small intestine in response to digestive cues. As we talked about earlier, some of the digestive cues to get the gallbladder to start to release bile is HCl and some of the targets of HCl, and then some of the other hormones like gastrin, for example, can get some of the bile to start moving as well to get the small bowel ready for food to come in. Bile is released, is triggered by a hormone called CCK, which is then released when fat enters into the small intestine. So when you have fat coming in, then bile goes, oh, it's time for me to work, because bile works on fat, right? Partially digested proteins or amino acids that are coming in from the stomach. Remember, the primary site of protein digestion is in the stomach. It's not in the mouth. It happens in the stomach. And then as those amino acids are coming out of the stomach, or those peptides that didn't get fully digested, as they're entering into the small bowel, you're getting this activation of the hormone CCK, right? And that allows for bile to be released to prepare for dealing with the food bolus that's coming through. And then the acidic chyme enters into the small intestine, and that also triggers the release of bile, because the acidic chyme is coming in with a very low pH, and your intestines want to buffer that pH and increase it, right? They want to increase it closer to 6 instead of 1. And so that's one of the roles that bile plays, is to actually neutralize some of that acid. And then this whole process also causes the release of bicarbonate, which also then buffers the acidic chyme that's coming in. Now, having the acidic chyme drop into the small intestine momentarily is a good thing, because that acidic chyme actually kills off dysfunctional bacteria in the proximal end of the small intestine. That's the part of the small intestine that connects to the stomach. And you don't want a lot of microbes in that region. It becomes a big problem if you have an overgrowth of microbes in that region. One of the ways in which the microbes are continuously knocked down in that very important region is the presence of the acid from the chyme, and then subsequently the release of bile as well, because bile also plays a role as an antimicrobial. Now, here's an incredibly important role of bile, right? Bile takes lipids and then makes it accessible throughout the body. So lipids are generally not going to be accessible throughout the body, because As you know, our cells are what we call a phospholipid bilayer, right? So it has a lipid tail, but an aqueous head. So the outside of the cells are aqueous, and it's hard for lipids to penetrate through. You need things that penetrate through water. So when I say aqueous, I mean water or water soluble. So most of our digestive tract is an aqueous environment. Our circulation, our blood circulation is an aqueous environment. Our lymphatic system is an aqueous environment, which means for things to get through and around the body, it cannot be in full fat form because water and oil and water and fat don't mix. So you can't solubilize lipids or lipid-based nutrients in the blood or in lymphatic system or in circulation to travel throughout the body. It has to be emulsified, right? That's a very important function of bile. Bile has this hydrophobic side, which is a fat-soluble side, and then a hydrophilic side, which is a water-loving side, and it covers the lipids. This is called an emulsification. So it's taking something that's insoluble in an aqueous solution and making it dispersible and/or soluble in that aqueous solution. So in the small intestine itself, when fat is coming in, or fatty acids, or lipids are coming in, bile is released, and then bile emulsifies the fat so that it can actually be absorbed through the intestinal epithelium. And then once it's absorbed, it can then be sent throughout circulation, right? So that's a very important thing. This emulsification step is critical, or you wouldn't be able to bring in any sort of lipids or lipid-based nutrients or metabolites and so on. So the lipid, these fatty acids, these smaller lipids that are now emulsified, get absorbed by the intestinal epithelial cells. The intestinal epithelial cells then turn them into something called a chylomicron, which is really a fat carrier. And these are called lipoproteins, right? So this is why LDL is low density lipoprotein, HDL is a high density lipoprotein. HDL and LDL are really carriers for fat and lipid nutrients, right? So those are being made in the cell from the emulsified lipids, and then they're putting them in these carrier systems called chylomicron or LDL or HDL, where then it can enter into circulation and circulate through the body. So these carriers, LDL, HDL, chylomicron, are really important to carry lipid and lipid-based nutrients throughout the body, but it's bile that makes that lipid-based nutrient accessible to the cell in the beginning, right? Without bile, you're not absorbing any of those lipids at all. Fat-soluble vitamins like A, D, E, and K are absorbed this way, and then stored, of course, in the liver. And then you have other fatty acids like DHA, EPA, and so on that has to get absorbed into the cells for them to function. And this emulsification is a really important step for those nutrients to get absorbed in. And then it detox and eliminates. Bile carries waste products from both in and out of the body, through the system and into the portal circulation, and takes it to the liver, where the liver can neutralize the toxin itself. Now, what are and then the other aspect of bile is that it's release of antimicrobial peptides and functionality, and then also acting as an antimicrobial itself. So bile has that detergent-like structure, right? So it is an emulsifier. Soaps or detergents are emulsifiers, and these emulsification processes do disrupt the membranes of certain bacteria, so it ends up killing certain bacteria. It also prevents bacteria from adhering to the mucosal lining. So imagine in your small intestine, where we want to keep very low numbers of bacteria, bile is constantly circulating through the digestive process. You can get about 15 rounds of bile circulating through, being released by the gallbladder, going through the entire small intestine, being reabsorbed at the end of the small intestine, and then being sent back to the gallbladder for release. Again, you can get 15 to 17 cycles of bile during the digestive process. One of those roles is it's cycling through is to maintain low levels of microbes, right? And it promotes low oxygen environment in the small intestine as well. You do have oxygen in the small environment, in the small intestinal environment, but bile does help quench some of that oxygen, so it's not a very high oxygen environment. And this is good for controlling pathogens, which is really important. And it's also a signaling molecule that positively influences the composition and behavior of the gut microbiome. So the rest of the gut microbiome takes bile as a signature of proper functionality. And then, of course, there are microbes that can will convert bile into secondary bile salts or secondary bile acids, which then feed beneficial microbes as well. It also upregulates an antimicrobial system by the intestinal epithelial cells, and that's called an FXR receptor. So bile triggers this receptor to get the intestinal lining cells to release antimicrobial peptides, because these antimicrobial peptides, again, control growth of microbes in the small intestine, where we want there to be very few microbes, right, compared to the large intestine. It helps neutralize and acidify the acidic chyme from the stomach, so it prevents intestinal damage by, you know, too acidic chyme coming in and damaging the intestinal borders, the layers of the cells itself. And then gets that system ready for pancreatic enzymes and so on. And the enterohepatic circulation is the circulation of bile. Bile is produced in the liver, sent to the gallbladder for storage, and then released by the gallbladder. It emulsifies fat small in the small intestine, and approximately 95% of the bile salts are reabsorbed by the small intestine, go back to the liver, get cleaned up, take all the nutrients taken out, toxins neutralized, and then goes back and gets recirculated through the gallbladder again. But keep in mind, it's 95%. So 5% of the bile makes its way into the proximal part of the large bowel, right? And this is for a very, very good reason, because when that 5% gets to the proximal part of the large bowel, there are microbes that convert that into secondary bile salts or bile acids. Those secondary bile salts play an important role in conjugation or deconjugation of toxins that are being secreted into the GI tract. They neutralize the growth of pathogens. For example, C. diff growth in the large bowel is heavily controlled by the presence of secondary bile salts. So that's how your body normally controls C. diff. Most of us have some amount of Clostridia difficile in our system, but our bile and then the metabolization of bile to secondary bile salts prevents the overgrowth of C. diff. If you take a course of antibiotics and it knocks down a lot of the good bacteria and you're not getting the production of secondary bile salts, that means C. diff can now have an opportunity to increase its numbers. That's one of the ways in which antibiotic use increases your risk of a C. diff infection, right? And then it also binds to this FXR and TGR5 receptors, which enhances metabolic pathways and improves lipid and glucose control within the system as well. An unhealthy or dysbiotic microbiome can disrupt metabolism, affecting fat digestion and toxin removal. You know, that there's one, those of you that got the bonus 7, you know, training sessions that are already pre-recorded, look at the deep dive I do on SIBO in that advanced training vault. I go really deep into bile and its actions and the impact on the microbiome in that particular module. So what are the signs and symptoms of a poor liver, gallbladder, and bile dysfunction? These are some of the ones. So take a look at those symptoms and try to decide if, you know, some of these are relevant to you. And of course, mark off the ones that you think are relevant to you.